Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You got Matt Miller on all the time.
Matt Miller.
Here I come. You ready?
Lead NFL and NFL draft analyst at Bleacher Report.
In the NFL, you need guys who have upside and potential, and you have to have something that kind of makes you special.
The Stick to Football Podcast.
We ain't got to talk about too much. We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it.
Going through college and NFL film.
You need to be just an MF-er out there where you're going to put this guy on the ground every play.
Matt Miller with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Matt Miller is on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. He of Bleacher Report, the Stick to Football podcast on Twitter, at NFL Draft Scout. So, first and foremost, Matt Miller, the rankings are out, the rankings that matter as we look at who is in line for the playoffs. What was your first thought on the unveiling?
I was really surprised, guys. I was surprised at how high Penn State was. You kind of expected some order of Ohio State, Alabama, LSU. Honestly, I thought the politics would come into play and it would be LSU 1, Alabama 2, or vice versa, just so that we could have, basically so that everyone could say on Saturday that it's number 1 versus number 2. But for Penn State to come in at 4, I was pleasantly surprised. I really thought that Clemson or a one-loss Oklahoma would get that nudge, but an undefeated Big Ten team, you got to put them up there. So it makes for fun. Next weekend we get, unless Minnesota takes Penn State down next week and we get undefeated Ohio State at undefeated Penn State. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Two really, really good weekends of college football in a row.
So if, well, I guess let's put it this way. In a vacuum, would Alabama and LSU move down the same amount of spots regardless of who loses the LSU-Alabama game?
Oh, that's a good question. I would think so. Like, I don't feel like you're going to go very far. You know, if you lose to the number two team or the number three team in the country, you shouldn't drop a lot. And I think with this, you know, the committee, we're still trying to figure out like what they actually value and like how that will work. But logically, we can say if Alabama beats LSU, how far should LSU drop? I mean, I would think they would probably go to 5 and Clemson just pushes up would be the way it would look to me. But again, this is, you're asking like 12 people in a room to make decisions and rank teams. And not that the computer was better, but I still feel like there are times where it doesn't always make a lot of sense what they do.
What is your scout's eye envisioning for LSU-Alabama individual matchups or what you're looking for next level meaning?
My God, guys, this is one of those games I'm going to have to watch 30 times. Honestly, I counted the other day. I have 26 draft eligible players ranked in this game. That's
wow.
Just for 2020.
Is that a record? Is that a record for one game?
That's a record. I thought last year, like Clemson, Alabama last year was like, and it had a lot, but so many of Clemson's players last year weren't draft eligible. And really a lot of Alabama's weren't draft eligible. So 26 players, think of that. There are 256 picks in the NFL draft. 10% of the NFL draft could be playing on the same field Saturday. I've never seen anything like it. So just the sheer amount of talent is ridiculous. And then when you add in, like you said, the individual matchups, you know, you can start with Jerry Jeudy at wide receiver against Christian Fulton and Derek Stingley Jr. Derek Stingley Jr. is only a true freshman, but he's the best corner in the country. It's absolutely insane. And so with that, then you have, okay, well, where's Grant Delpit going to play? Is he going to play over the top on Henry Ruggs? Is he going to play over the top on Jerry Jeudy? Because Alabama has four receivers who look like they could each be, I mean, Jeudy and Ruggs are going to go top 10 or 15, and then Waddle and Smith are really good prospects in their own right. So that matchup, and then you flip it, and for LSU, you have Jefferson and Jamar Chase. How are they going to match up against, you know, those Alabama corners who are really good, and Xavier McKinney, who's the best free safety in the draft, floating over the top. So it's just matchup on top of matchup. Every matchup, whether it's Caleb Von Chase on rushing off the edge against Alex Leatherwood, like this is the kind of stuff you dream about as an evaluator because you want those marquee matchups. You know, you want best on best in a game situation. You're actually going to get that across the board. This isn't one of those games where it's like, okay, we have a really good receiver against a really good corner. you have a really good everything against a really good everything. So it's gonna be a great test, you know, for a guy like Joe Burrow, who I'm super high on. Folks are saying, oh, he hasn't played anyone. Well, you won't be able to say that after this.
Here we go.
You're playing the best defense in the country that is littered with first-rounders. So a lot of the excuses, you know, for Obama hasn't played anyone or LSU hasn't played anyone, which, by the way, they beat a really good Florida team. All those excuses are going to go away after Saturday.
Because of the talent involved, what draft-eligible player has the most to gain in this game? And if the answer is Joe Burrow, give me two.
It's definitely Joe Burrow, without a doubt. Just because I feel like, and I actually like sent a memo, like a Jerry Maguire-type memo to Bleacher Report writers this week. It's like, stop saying that Joe Burrow is a one-year wonder. That just, it tells everyone that you didn't watch football last year, and it makes you sound stupid. So stop saying it. Like, don't say that stuff to me. But I think this could be his coming out party. And something I've told you guys before with quarterbacks, we all want to think that we evaluate, you know, black and white, and we're very analytical, but we're also human beings, and we're prone to excitement, and we're prone to falling for a guy. And I think with Burrow, he can have that game. If he plays against Alabama like he did against Florida, we have to have a conversation about, number one, should he win the Heisman Trophy? And number two, should he be the number one quarterback in this class with Tua's injuries? So I think Burrow has a huge chance to shoot up boards. I think secondarily, Christian Fulton, the corner for LSU, who's an upperclassman, he's going to be in this draft. I like him better than I liked Greedy Williams last year, a player that I really liked, Greedy. But I think some of the questions with Fulton is, you have a physical guy. He's 6'1", he's 195, 200 pounds. Can he run with the speed of Alabama? Because Henry Ruggs is certified freak fast. I mean, I said it the other day on a podcast, and someone thought I was crazy. He's Tyreek Hill without the off-field issues. He's that fast. I mean, he's Olympic fast. So can Christian Fulton keep up with that? Can he keep up with the agility of Jerry Jeudy, who looks like Odell Beckham out there running routes? So that's the big question. Fulton has a chance to really make a name for himself in a cornerback class that has Jeff Okuda, who's really good. And then there's this tier of guys like C.J. Henderson, Paulson Adebo, Christian Fulton. He has a chance to move to the top of that second tier and maybe higher with a really good game against the best wide receiver core I've ever seen.
We've talked a lot about Mitchell Trubisky, about what was wrong about the scouting of him, about what so many believed he could be, and now he's just not. And we've sorted through some of the wreckage of this season. What lesson might there be to be learned about the next guy who is a collection of traits, who is somebody who has not a ton of experience at the collegiate level? How can we make sure a Trubisky-like scouting mistake isn't made again?
Well, that's it, Dan. It's going back to, okay, one-year starters, I'm skeptical of. You know, it's just, and Trubisky's not the only guy that you can blame that on, but I'm incredibly skeptical of that. And I think it's always like easy to look back and be like, oh, dang, we were really, really wrong about this guy. But you also have to like go back and live in the moment a little bit of like, what was scouting like in 2017? You know, what were we looking for at the position? And Trubisky, from those traits, checked every box, but just the lack of game tape. And it goes both ways. Not only is Mitch inexperienced, but defensive coordinators didn't get a great look at him. This isn't the NFL where you play, you know, your division twice a year and you got a chance to rebound. I think one thing that I've talked to a lot of my scouting friends about, trying to own up, you know, trying to self-scout, where did I mess up, is to say that. I'm like, okay, playing in the ACC, like, you're not really playing anyone that good, especially back in the 2016 season. And so it's like, you got a one-year guy who really didn't play any good defenses, and he didn't really play any defensive coordinators who were able to prepare for him. And if you look at college football, a quarterback's second year is almost always their worst one. You know, think about Deshaun Watson. That second year starting at Clemson, they won a national championship. They're really good, but he threw a ton of picks that year. Trevor Lawrence this year.
Why is that?
A lot more.
My guess would be, not only is there tape, but a coach feels that they can probably add more and ask more, and maybe that's where you learn limitations when you say, okay, now let's see what you can do, and then maybe pull it back.
Absolutely. I think we're seeing that with Trevor Lawrence, where they've tried to pull it back a little bit. Like, okay, just get back to doing what you do well. You know, just be a playmaker. Run the ball if you have to. You know, throw it up to these amazing receivers that we get to do it. So I think, like, that's the key is, and I'm not saying there's never going to be a one-year starter again where we're like, oh, my God, look at this guy. But it's definitely something you have to have major concerns about, especially when if it's a one-year starter in the ACC as opposed to a one-year starter in the SEC, you know, in the SEC, you're going to see five or six really good defenses for them, most likely, and especially if you get into a playoff situation. So I think, like, for me personally, there are a lot of lessons to learn about the or from the 2017 draft. You know, you have guys like Pat Mahomes, who was all traits and, you know, was not ready to play in the NFL. He got to sit a year. And I'm not saying that if Trubisky got to sit a year, things would be different, because I personally don't really believe they would be, because we're just seeing some limitations there. But it just goes to show that the quarterback position, more than anything, environment matters and situation matters. Like, you can have talent, and if you end up in a wrong situation, it's not going to matter.
Cam Newton being put on IR had a lot of people in town talking about the perspective of him leaving the Panthers after the year and perhaps migrating to a different team. If you had to rank, not necessarily for the Bears, but just kind of over across the NFL, who's going to be the, you know, the top three sought-after quarterback options? And I don't mean just guys who will be free agents. I mean guys who could reasonably be plucked from their roster.
Yeah, I think Cam is obviously way up there. And, you know, I think the key there is, what does the foot look like? You know, is he going to be able to go? You know, so I think that would be the number one. I think Andy Dalton's a really good option. And I feel like he's got, like, a bad rap. The fact that Andy Dalton took the Bengals to the playoffs 3 years in a row might go down as, like, one of the greatest accomplishments ever. You know, like, that team and that organization is so dysfunctional, and they're so, you know, they have a small scouting staff in the NFL. They're just cheap and they're not well run, and they never really, you know, put a lot of talent around this guy. So I would be interested to see what Andy Dalton would look like with a good defense or with just, like, some competent people around him. I don't think he's a Super Bowl winner by any stretch of the imagination, but put him on a good team, and can he elevate the guys around him? You know, he was playing pretty well this year when they decided to bench him for Ryan Finley. So I think he's up there as well. And then Teddy Bridgewater is the other one. And I don't know if Teddy's going to leave New Orleans. And I've said before on this very program, I don't know that he's the best fit for Chicago, just because I think he would prefer to be either inside or in a warmer climate. So he might be a guy that goes to Tennessee, you know, and then Marcus Mariota's backing up someone next year somewhere else. But I think those are the top three names. And again, that's, you know, hinging on Kyle Allen playing really well over the next 8 weeks, so that the Panthers feel like they can move on from Cam Newton and his, you know, massive contract. And the same goes for Cincinnati, where they're going to draft the quarterback if Ryan Finley plays poorly, but Andy Dalton's actually under contract until the end of the 2020 season. So that could be an interesting situation where you have the cheapest franchise in the NFL. Would they be willing to, you know, let go of a guy where they might have to eat a little bit of money to do it?
Who do you like in Bears Lions?
Oh, God. I think the Lions. I don't know. Thursday's my day to pick games, and, like, that's what I do in the afternoon. Both teams are so inconsistent that it's heartbreaking, right? Because you see flashes. I feel like the Bears' defense, we haven't talked a lot about that, the three of us, I'm sure you guys have. Like, the defense also is not playing well. It's not just the offensive line. It's not just Mitch. I wonder if Detroit, you know, can run the ball well enough to just dominate this game in the trenches a little bit. And I think we'll see Detroit's defensive line have a pretty good day. Everyone does against Chicago lately, so I think I'll pick Detroit, but I got a couple hours yet still to make that decision.
Where's Matthew Stafford on the list of bad raps? If we're talking about Andy Dalton, I feel like Matthew Stafford is somewhere on that list, and I'm not exactly sure.
He might be the top.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand the lack of appreciation for him. I think just because they don't win a lot of games, but my goodness, what more could a guy do? And I know he had, like, some bad throws and he had some bad moments. I actually love Stafford. We were talking about this on my radio show a couple of days ago. It's like, gosh, I love the way he plays. If I could put him on another team, like, if I could put him with the Chargers when Phillip Rivers retires, like, it'd be such a great fit, because, you know, he has a fantastic arm and he's accurate. You know, he's been very, very productive. And, you know, when it was just him and Calvin Johnson, it was truly just him and Calvin Johnson. And now, you know, look how good Kenny Galladay looks. I think Stafford deserves a lot more credit than he gets. I would guess that Bears fans have a new appreciation for Stafford this season, where you're like, dang, I would really much rather have that guy than what we have right now at quarterback.
Matt, great stuff, man.
Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate it, guys. Talk to you next week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.